Deezer Originals.
This is Defending in Numbers.
Oh, it's a transfer deadline day hangover on Defending in Numbers, the podcast where we walk down the corridor of uncertainty, pretending to know a little bit more about football than we actually do. My name is Rob Armstrong, and I stayed up very, very late in the evening waiting for something other than Jordan Hughill to happen. But today, to console me, I'm sure, with lots of great stats about the big man himself, it's Ali Maxwell. Ali, how are you?
Very well. Good morning to you, Rob.
Are you happy with Giroud? You're a Chelsea man yourself.
Yeah, I'm happy with Giroud as a signing. I think that he will be a good addition to the squad, and that's what Chelsea had done this window. Conte probably still not happy, but I think it represents a good deal for us.
Morata and Giroud standing next to each other. That is a heartbreaker of a front line. We are also joined today by a debutante. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah. Like I say, weary.
Weary,
but you're a Southampton fan, of course. How are you feeling?
Equally weary. Yeah, numbed to the bone by one goal per game and a lack of excitement that I just can't get my head around, really.
Well, for people echoing Alex Stewart's lack of excitement that he can't get his head around, fill your lives with some more excitement by listening, of course, to Defending in Numbers on Deezer, where you can also find lots more great podcasts, live Premier League commentary and football playlists. You can download the app or go to www.deezer.com on your parents' laptop, desktop. We've all got laptops because we're all millennials, aren't we, Ali?
Yeah, I know I am.
Who notoriously can't do anything.
Millennial and proud.
Yeah. Shout out to all the millennials out there. Let's get into the week by numbers.
The week by numbers.
Okay, let's get on to the big transfer deal from yesterday. And that's the old triangle, the Bermuda Triangle of transfers, in a way that it's completely not at all. And the number 265, which is the combined number of goals scored by Aubameyang, Giroud and Batshuayi for their previous respective clubs. It's 141 for Dortmund for Aubameyang, 105 for Arsenal from Giroud, and just a measly 19 from Batshuayi. As our resident Chelsea man, I think maybe you want to kick us off, Ali, because you've got the Giroud now and you had the Batshuayi before, but now they're gone.
Yeah, it could be a Bermuda Triangle. One of them probably will go missing at some point. I think everyone can be fairly content sitting here on the morning after the transfer window closed.
Or two mornings later if they're listening on Friday, which they will be.
I think everyone can be fairly happy sitting here soon after the transfer window's closed. You know, Arsenal have got themselves inarguably one of the best pure number nines in world football. And I don't think there's a huge amount of world-class number nines. The next question is whether they'll be creating Aubameyang the type of chances that he's used to in Dortmund. And arguably, Arsenal's style does lend itself to that. But that remains to be seen. How will they fit him and Lacazette together? It's a good problem to have. Ozil, Lacazette, and Aubameyang, and Mkhitaryan. You know, those are four eye-catching players to have in your attacking arsenal. But at the back is the issue, of course, and it remains to be seen whether this side will be in any way balanced. I think that for Chelsea, Giroud constitutes, in the short term, an upgrade on Batshuayi as backup to Alvaro Morata. Having said that, if Morata's poor form continues, you know, I'm expecting good things from Giroud, and I wouldn't be shocked if by the end of the season he's playing a lot more than Batshuayi was playing and getting a lot more chances, because I think he's a smarter player. I think he'll link well with Hazard. We've seen his link-up play be pretty strong in the past for Arsenal, and of course he does offer a pretty underrated goal threat, I think, especially off the bench in the last 2 years for Arsenal. And Batshuayi, he needs game time. There's no secret. He'll probably get it at Dortmund with them missing Aubameyang. And again, he is a pure goal scorer, but offered so little outside of that for Chelsea. And for some reason, Conte just didn't fancy him at all. So at this
Good tweets.
That,
I can't say he didn't offer anything.
You know, that's a big part of it these days.
He offered engagement and content.
I think in reflection, and I'm sitting on the fence as usual, I think everyone at this stage will be very happy. We'll have to wait and see a few months and see how it's turned out.
Alex Stewart, who got the best deal out of those three?
I'd say Arsenal, certainly. I think, like Ali said, you know, pure goal scorers are a premium. And Aubameyang is exactly the sort of quick, predatory striker that should, you know, in since he made his debut in the Bundesliga, only Lewandowski scored more. And Lewandowski is arguably one of the best number nines in world football and has been for a number of years. I think what's interesting as well is obviously relinking with Mkhitaryan. In the 2015-16 season, when they played together at Dortmund, Aubameyang got 25 goals, Mkhitaryan got 11, 15 assists, which was the highest in the Bundesliga, and they assisted each other three times. So if those two can rediscover that synergy, then Arsenal, I think, are really on something. Exactly like Ali said, the question for them is going to be, how do we fit all of these players in together? Maybe a sort of Brazil 82 magic square type thing. I mean, can you imagine, like, Aubameyang, Lacazette with Ozil and Mkhitaryan playing behind them, and then width coming from the fullbacks in a four-man defence? That would be... That could be scintillating.
Mm, mm. I can't believe Danny Welbeck's not in the Magic Square.
No.
I think he'd be a bit confused being on the pitch with that lot. Poor Danny. Yeah, it's interesting. They've gone really big, Arsenal, on the Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan being back together. Whether that's whether they've been pushed to sort of say that, but it was one of the first things Aubameyang said in his first interview. You know, I'm thrilled to be back with Mickey. Obviously, Mkhitaryan was part of the announcement with his funny little clip. So it'd be really exciting for the Premier League if those two can click, and it would be fantastic for Arsenal fans who need a bit of levity after a tough half decade when it comes to losing their best players.
Yeah, well, it was the Mkhitaryan clip. I haven't seen the announcement thing yet. Was it the same as everyone thought a week ago, where they thought they saw Mkhitaryan saying, "Come to Arsenal," or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's...
Lip readers are too good these days. It's mental. No wonder everyone's covering their mouth all the time.
Yeah, I completely agree. No, it was interesting. I think that, it's... For Batshuayi, he's got something to prove, and I think he's in the right place to do it. So, you know, we'll probably be seeing more of Giroud and Aubameyang here in the UK. But for Batshuayi, he's still young, still got, you know, bags of goals left in him in his career, and Dortmund's a very good place to be for that.
I think the one thing I'd say on the Giroud thing is that he was definitively a plan B for Arsenal, but as you said, the very effective plan B. And I just wonder whether Arsenal now are slightly missing that. Yeah, I'm not saying Lacazette and Aubameyang are two peas in a pod, but there isn't that kind of big physical striker that can work in quite the same way off the bench, whereas Chelsea have brought in a striker who's not enormously dissimilar to what they have already. So it's like Arsenal now only have a plan A and Chelsea only have a plan A. And it'll be quite interesting to see how that pans out. And
yeah. My last thing on this, which amused me, was that Arsenal used a clip. They said, "This is what our new signing can do." And they used a clip of Aubameyang scoring an amazing free kick from about 30 yards in Dortmund colours. I think it was the only goal he scored from outside the box out of however many he scored, which was close to 100 in Dortmund colours. The only one that he scored from outside the box, the most misrepresentative social media clip they could possibly have used. But, you know, a bit more flashy than a tap in from a cutback and 6 yards out.
He's the Chicharito of Gabon. On that note, let's go on to the next number, which is 33.99%, which is, you know, for most of us, 34%. That's a proportion of Premier League goals Riyad Mahrez has contributed to Leicester since the 2015-2016 season, which is an awful lot for one man. 31 goals, 21 assists, which makes 52 of the 153 goals. Basically, deadline day, bid comes in from Man City. Or the day before, in fact, wasn't it? And that rumbled on until about 5 or 6. And then Leicester put the price up to something crazy, wasn't it? Was it 95 million?
95 million.
95 million quid. In this market, is he worth that? I think we can probably say probably not. But he is a very good player. And would he have fit in at that City team? Or would he have sort of looked massively outclassed the minute Sané came back?
I think anyone can fit into that City team under Pep's direction. I think, to my mind, the odd thing about that deal was that something Pep's shown throughout the course of this season, his ability to get players to play in positions that they're not necessarily that familiar with. And so with someone like Zinchenko already at City and good attacking players like Diaz, I know Foden's injured at the moment, but he'll be coming back. I think City have got the ability to adapt and get players to play out of position rather than spending an extraordinary amount of money on someone who, yes, is a very, very good player, arguably one of the two or three best outside the top six. But as a stopgap, because I think Sané would come back into that side once he was fit, it does seem overpriced. It's interesting that City have spent a huge amount of money, but Laporte is still their biggest signing financially, and that's 57 million. So they've spent a lot because they've acquired a large number of players. They're still resistant to splurging big bucks on one-off purchases. And I think they've probably made the right decision here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more about Mahrez. I don't think that on a larger scale, this will be a huge issue for Man City. Having missed out on him, of course, would have been, as Alex said, a fantastic stopgap. But long term, let's talk about next season or the season after, which, if you're buying someone for that much money, is what you've got to be thinking of. I find it hard to see him as a starter for a Man City team going forward outside of this couple of months. And therefore, save the money for someone in the summer where transfer fees are, you can probably get slightly better value. Although Man City, as a very, very rich club, will always struggle to find the best value. And a few more minutes for Zinchenko, who, poor bloke's been doing the best in the Carabao Cup that he can be, but has mostly been shifted to sort of left back, left wing back. And I'm not sure that's ideally his natural position. So it'd be good to see him get some more minutes, and Diaz as well, who's played the last couple of games and looked fairly bright. Not a huge loss for Man City. Mahrez is a fantastic player. But I don't think it's a given that he would perform at the very top level for a very top team. And sometimes you get players like that who are so standout for teams outside the top six. And when they get that move up, it's a bit harder to recreate, and I think Mahrez is in that category for me.
It's an awful lot of a massive proportion of the goals, though, and assists that he's contributed to that Leicester team. I think it's he is a proven Premier League player now. It's not like we thought it was just a flash in the pan, maybe that first season, because he went off the boil a little bit the next year, but then they all did. But he's come back and he is contributing goals and assists and like class goals. And important goals is kind of his speciality.
Yeah.
So I wonder, for him, if you're a Leicester fan, do you resent him because he wants out? Or is it fair enough that he's doing these numbers, but the move just doesn't seem to happen?
It's very tough. I mean, the success that he's helped to bring the club will go down as the greatest moment in the club's history. And as you say, after an immediate blip, putting up some really good numbers still. The off-the-pitch stuff, the repeated transfer requests, is going to impact that slightly. His legacy will be judged a few years after he leaves, I think, because you can never really tell in the immediate aftermath of someone leaving, when emotions are high, how that'll stand up to the test of time. Final point is he plays off the right, cutting onto his left foot. Sané's out injured, playing very much left wing. I mean, Mahrez wouldn't have come in and recreated what Sané gives. If anything, he would have been expecting to play off the right. And if that's the case, well, you've got Bernardo Silva, who could definitely do with some more minutes, has started some games recently, but previously not in the starting 11. So it would have been, for me, an unnecessary signing, which might sound like strong words, but I'll stick by him.
I think the thing with Mahrez as well, in terms of that proportion of goals and assists, is that Leicester are a team that are unusually reliant on two players. I think Vardy and Mahrez between them account for nigh on 70% of everything that Leicester do in terms of goals and assists, which is a much greater proportion than the vast majority of Premier League sides, to rely on two players. So while it is outstanding in that Leicester side, particularly if you look at how the title-winning side was set up, it was to feed those guys. And I'm not saying that Mahrez necessarily looked better as a result of that than his kind of baseline ability is. But when a side like Guardiola sets up where everyone can attack, stuff's coming in from you know, every single sort of position, again, you know, is he going to stand out? Is he going to make that kind of impact? I would say probably not, because the team isn't geared towards feeding him.
Mm. Let's move on to another transfer. A transfer that actually happened. Lucas Moura and the number 229. That's the number of games he played for PSG, the most by any Brazilian in the club's history. Only has to play 82 to get that at Spurs. Lucas Moura is a player, I think 3 or 4 years ago, people were saying was going to go, and at this time, PSG weren't a huge club. I know now you probably would say they are, because they got the Neymar thing, and you look at them as one of the favourites of the Champions League. But 4 years ago, we were like, yeah, Farmers League, Ligue 1, whatever. Lucas Moura, we kind of thought he was going to go for huge money. This, like, massively pacey Brazilian, scores, assists, just looked like the real deal, and it looked like PSG had a great player in their hands. But now it's just gone for 25 million, which, all things considered, these days, not a lot. Already has handshakes with all the Spurs players, though.
So I did notice that.
It's worth his weight in handshakes, yeah. Worth his value anyway. How's he going to be over here? And where does he fit into that Pochettino team? Because I think they've had maybe a few... The fact that they've played Moussa Sissoko quite a lot this season suggests that right side could use a little bit of Brazilian flavour.
Where does he fit in the Pochettino system is the big question. And it's not immediately obvious to me, watching them play so brilliantly against Man United. In terms of width, it is generated almost entirely or consistently by the fullbacks, Trippier especially. And while Eriksen and to a lesser extent Ali have the license to drift out wide and use that license very well, that's not where they would expect to be spending the majority of their time. I think that is where Lucas Moura needs to spend the majority of his time. He's not as good in tight spaces as those players, technically. He's a player, I think, that thrives on the counter-attack, ideally, and with space to run into. We've seen that at PSG. He's got impressive figures, probably boosted by playing in such a dominant team, and being able to come off the bench.
Snap padding.
Yeah, being able to come off the bench when teams are a little bit more stretched. It never felt like he was truly part of PSG's plan A, I don't think. And I know he had a good season or two, but again, it's not immediately clear to me where he's going to fit into the Poch team. Now, is it still a good deal? Well, it certainly could be. £25 million represents good value for a player of his pedigree and age and recent history. Not a terrible thing to have a plan B, which we were talking about earlier. It's how Poch will work him into the side that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think Spurs are absolutely at their best when they're playing those very quick interchanges between whether it's Dele Alli, Eriksen or Song Heung-min in the half spaces, you know, quick 1-2 passes and finding space that way. And as you say, Moura, much more kind of hugging the touchline, whether that will cause congestion with Trippier on the right trying to overlap, whether Moura can be instructed to cut inside and add that way. I mean, I think his Champions League experience will be beneficial. And I think there's always, I suppose, there's not always, but there's often a kind of a good feeling that's generated by somebody with that level of experience coming from a big club into a new one. And Spurs haven't necessarily had an awful lot of purchases like that of late. So it could inject almost more of a kind of morale boosting thing rather than necessarily something. Pochettino is not the kind of manager who's going to go out and spend a lot of money on players unless he knows he can do something with them. So he will know, and maybe it is that plan B. And I think this is the thing with good sides, is that we've seen in the Premier League a lot this kind of very reactive football from less good sides against the ones that really push forwards. And maybe sides are starting to realise that actually what they need to do is to have something that can counter these kind of low blocks, very compact defensive lines. And somebody who has the pace to get out wide and pull it back is possibly what Spurs envisage with the Moura signing.
And 25 million is really good value.
In today's market, right? It's excellent value. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you talk about today's market where, you know, prices are fluctuating a lot and it just seems to be going up and up. That I think Spurs have looked at a club in PSG who actually don't need to recoup vast amounts and can probably, I'm not saying that they're cutting their losses by getting rid of Moura, but he's probably on a significant wage there. So by targeting a player on a big wage at a club that aren't really that fussed about selling, then Spurs probably have got a lower price than they would have done if they'd been buying a similar sort of player from somewhere else.
Mm. I think it's mad, the number of appearances he has, given that we're talking about him as, you know, plan B, not quite essential to PSG, but he's got, I'm reading a list of stats and
your
numbers.
Your trusty
here.
List.
My spin-off podcast of Overwhelmed by Numbers doesn't have such luxuries. But yeah, only Toni Kroos and Dani Alves created more chances in Champions League last season than Lucas Moura. They got 33, he got 25. 34 goals, 29 assists in 152 league app games. 372 take-ons. That's got Jake Entwistle written all over it. Regular guest. Lover of the take-on. 372 take-ons since 2012-2013. At least 153 more than any other player for PSG. They're all, like we say, he's been doing his fair share of stat padding, but that's not what you get being a, you know, last 5 minutes.
You're right. He's put up impressive numbers in his fairly lengthy PSG career. He's barely played this season, though, Rom. I think that's a big reason why they'll have been so happy to
let him
go. He didn't play in the Champions League, so he is eligible to play against Juventus for Spurs, and that's a big thing for them. I think that sort of says it all, really. He's been a good player for PSG over the years, doesn't fit into their current system. For them, 25 mil for a player that's made six, I think, sub-appearances this season represents a nice bit of income.
Yeah.
And for Spurs, a lot of upside, could be an exceptional signing. My only concern is Poch's recent history with pure wingers is not hugely successful, I don't think. So remains to be seen.
Okay, let's talk about the transfer window as a whole then and go to the number 545.6 million, which I think might be the biggest number we've had in week one numbers. Unless, of course, we've talked about Fellaini's buyout clause at some point. But so there's 200 deals being done in the Premier League at the moment, when I checked just before we started recording. And there have been some pretty big deals, actually, I think, this window. You lads should have a sheet with all of them on. Let's run through some of them. So you've got your Cenk Tosun, which I've probably pronounced wrong, to Everton, Barkley to Chelsea, Coutinho to Barcelona. Obviously, that was a huge one that happened pretty early. Coquelin's gone, Walcott's gone, Sanchez has gone from Arsenal, another huge one. Mkhitaryan to Arsenal. Lennon, Carrillo, of course, for you. Alex is your resident saint.
Yeah, yeah.
And a Southampton fan as well.
Yeah. we have banter.
We desperately need a goal scorer.
Yeah.
So I think he'll suit what we do. I think he'll suit the style we play. I think only Spurs cross more than Southampton or have done in the league this season. I think we're averaging 21 crosses per game. Spurs run 22. And Carrillo's 6'2", gets on the end of crosses, has, so far this season, only Charlie Austin's got a better goals per 90 for us than Carrillo have for Monaco. And that's by the slimmest fraction. Yeah, hopefully we'll get what we need because we are playing very badly at the moment.
Would you say, because I think there's a few clubs that have had a really good window, namely the top six have had quite a good window. And then I think the clubs in that sort of splodge in the middle where everyone could get relegated, I don't think there's many good windows that have happened there. And would you say Southampton have had a good one getting Carrillo in, or are you still lacking?
No, I think we've addressed one of the two areas of deficiency. Obviously, with the departure of Van Dijk, centre-back is something of a concern, although it's great to see Jack Stevens scoring his second goal in two, and only his second goal ever for us. But Stevens and Maya Yoshida as a as a centre-back pairing in the Premier League do not inspire an enormous amount of confidence. But again, centre-back is clearly one of those positions, along with out-and-out strikers, that are commanding serious premium dollar at the moment. So, yeah, perhaps it wasn't right to move in that. And so we've addressed the other serious area of concern. I mean, Southampton are actually, stylistically, we're not playing badly. We're creating a reasonable amount of chances. We have consistently, over about the last four seasons, have one of the worst shot conversion rates of any club. And last season, it was certainly the worst. This season, I think it's the worst or the second worst. So the chances are going in, largely from crosses, and they're just not being put away. So if we can get a person, I thought it would be Gabbiadini last season, it wasn't. But if we can get a person to stick those in, we will be fine. I say that with real confidence. I think Swansea have probably had a reasonable window as well. But yeah, otherwise in the splodge, as you say, there's nothing outstanding.
No, Swansea, of course, coming in, taking West Ham's one of our only fit players for 20 million quid or 18 million quid.
Well, he's fit at the moment, but he's not had a great record of injuries, has he, while at West Ham. 18 million for me seems like a good bit of business for West Ham.
It's a great bit of business when you reinvest it. But when you put it into Jordan Hugill.
Jordan Hugill.
Hugill.
Yeah.
Good bloke.
Yeah.
Hugill in East London, though, isn't
it?
I think West Ham and Newcastle have had a similar window, which has involved a fair amount of lying from our respective owners. West Ham, when you look at it, we've got Hugill and João Mário in. João Mário, obviously, alone, with like a £45 million buyout at the end of it, which won't get activated. And then Hugill, a completely unproven championship striker playing in the Premier League now. He's like the Championship's Troy Deeney, is what I gather from the three questions I've asked and the minimal research I put into anything.
Yeah, we can go with that.
And then Newcastle, yesterday or last couple of days, managed to get Kennedy and Slimani over the line. But Benitez has got to be tearing what's left of his hair out. And I think Moyes may be feeling similar.
Yeah, I think that with Newcastle, and this isn't groundbreaking news, but Mike Ashley continues to do the bare minimum in terms of spending money on players in order to... He's basically trying to do the bare minimum while staying up in order to boost either the value of the club for a sale or to get another year of that sweet, sweet TV money. And it's such a significant thing that it's a gamble to put together a squad as he has. You know, they've made these signings in January alone, Kennedy alone, I think Slimani. So if it works for him, then he'll be very, very smug. But it must be exasperating for. In fact, I know it is for Newcastle fans and for Benitez himself. The squad is not good enough. The quality going forward is not good enough, and they've not addressed those issues. So, if they were to go down, I think there would be, perhaps more so than other clubs, a fairly obvious reason for that, and that would be a lack of investment, not just in January, but in the summer as well after promotion. Ever so slightly different possibly for West Ham, because money does get spent at West Ham more so than at Newcastle. It just doesn't always get spent very well, and that can be frustrating. And the way that the owners approach the transfer market and what they do or don't disclose to the fans is often pretty head-scratching as well. So frustrating for West Ham fans as well, perhaps in a slightly different way.
There's a lot of that scapegoating going on at West Ham. We've obviously, Bilic got run over by the bus about four times. And last night, and I'm going to play devil's advocate, that was his name, Tony Henry. Don't condone what he said, but I find it very interesting that just as the deadline approaches, where we've somehow managed to make a £15 million profit on deadline day and not bought any players in, that gets leaked. And all of a sudden, we have someone to blame that isn't the board again. What you said is wrong, but now they can just sack him.
Yeah.
And that's him to blame, isn't it?
Yeah, for the last few seasons, the leaks, if that's what they are, the general standard of comms.
I've got my tinfoil hat on.
Yeah.
Conspiracy theorist over here.
Well, you know.
Well, half of them aren't even leaks. Half of them are just the owners taking to Twitter and going, yeah, we should never sign that guy. He's rubbish. My kids told me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then having the player respond to say, oh, thanks very much for the vote of confidence while on loan somewhere.
Astonishing.
You know, you look at the professionalism of that setup, and if you're a player, yes, I know how attractive the Premier League is to players outside of the Premier League, but even so, you'd think, you know, if maybe there's one or two offers on the table for you other than West Ham, you would give those strong consideration because of the way the club appears to be run. And you'd think, well, do I really want to, you know, get myself into that situation only to have to extricate myself a year later when I've been sent on loan to Norwich? Mm. It's a very odd one.
Mm. Okay, let's not dwell on it too much, because otherwise everyone will think I'm a lunatic conspiracy bloke and I believe in reptilians and things. We're probably just rubbish. all right, let's talk about just transfer window, who, including everyone. Who do we think in the Premier League has had the best window? I'll start with you, Alex.
Best window, I would say, would be Arsenal.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think you're guaranteed goals with Aubameyang, you're guaranteed assists with Mkhitaryan if you get him playing well. You've united two players who clearly get on very well, who will bring some of that very, very close-knit kind of Dortmund spirit that was fostered while they were there together. If Wenger can incorporate the two of them and get them playing well, then that's certainly a recipe for success.
All right, I think you've convinced me. I think I'll go with Arsenal as well. A little bit concerned that they still didn't sign the defensive midfielder they've needed for 19 years.
That's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen.
Let's just write that off.
They might end up being the most entertaining for the neutral Premier League team of all time at this rate, because going forward they're going to be dynamite, and at the back as bad as ever. So yeah, very exciting. It's quite hard to pick between the top six teams, and I don't think anyone outside of the top six did enough significant business that will significantly alter their fortunes from now until the rest of the season. So focusing on the top six, I think that, you know, without wanting to sound condescending to Arsenal, they have done very well. You know, they lost their best player, and they've managed to come out looking pretty good for it. And I think, you know, it's not easy to do that, and they have managed to parlay two very good players signing in the January transfer window, and that's pretty rare in itself. So,
and re-signing Ozil,
and of course re-signing Ozil, a player who will now be at the club into his 30s, which is something that previously Arsene Wenger has been absolutely terrified of. Ozil strikes me anyway as the type of player who will probably not drop off too much in his early 30s. His style and his qualities, I expect to remain at a pretty high level for the next few years. So that's excellent business as well. So I'll go with Arsenal with a nod to Chelsea, just basically for improving their bench options for a couple of additions in Barkley, Emerson and Giroud, none of which were sort of eye-watering prices and could potentially have a good impact in the second half of the season when we're looking at Champions League and FA Cup, which is basically what they've got to play for now.
All right, then, that's enough of numbers. Let's move on to embarrassment and humiliation. With the next section, I'm embarrassed to ask. Physically embarrassed.
I'm embarrassed to ask.
Okay, then. There are some issues with cup-tied players that I'm not sure are fully got to grips with. So there are players going around all over the place. A lot more January signings between big teams than you normally get. So Giroud, he can play for Chelsea, right?
Correct.
In all the cups. Mkhitaryan can play for Arsenal in the Europa League, but yes, with a different number. Well, Aubameyang can't, which wasn't he in the Champions League? So he isn't. I don't know. You're going to have to explain this to me later. And Coutinho is cup tied for Barcelona, but that is just for the Champions League, surely. Okay. Of course, it's not the Copa del Rey. He hasn't played in that. Yeah. Someone explain it to me. Who's cup tied for where?
Well, Giroud eligible for Champions League action with Chelsea on account of having played not in the Champions League this year, but in the Europa League. So it's to do with which A, which competitions you've played in for your previous club. So he can play in the Champions League. Mkhitaryan can play for Arsenal in the Europa League on account of him playing in the Champions League in the first half of the season for Manchester United. Now, you're right to flag up that Aubameyang did indeed play in the Champions League. The second part of the rule is if the club that you've signed from are playing in the same competition as the club you're now playing for, you cannot play for your new club. Therefore, Dortmund, who finished third, they are down in the Europa League, joining in the knockout stages. They're in the same competition as Arsenal, and as such, Aubameyang is not allowed to play. Lucas Moura, just showing off here, Lucas Moura is eligible because he didn't play for PSG in the Champions League and now can play for Spurs in that competition. And Coutinho, of course, ineligible because Liverpool are still in the Champions League with Barcelona, and that's who he played for in the first half of the season.
Did he play a game for Liverpool in the Champions League? Because he must have done.
Yes. Definitely.
So that makes sense to me. But the Aubameyang one seems bizarre.
It does seem a little counterintuitive that the complexities of European competition, where you move from one to the other if you fail to progress from the Champions League group stages. And that's something that actually some fans of the Europa League don't like anyway. You know, why should these clubs be parachuted in? But if you haven't played in that competition already, it does seem odd that just because your club is now in it and your new club is now in it, you can't, particularly when Arsenal have been in it. Mm. I don't know. Sometimes you get these arcane rules, don't you? And you think, why is that there? But you just have to accept it, don't you?
I think the cup tie rule is almost like a strange rule in itself, because if you can play in the league, like the league is essentially a cup, it's just a cup that's 38 games long, isn't it? Mm. Mm. If you can play in that for two different teams, why can't you play in a cup for two different teams?
Yeah, there's a lot of strange rules in football, Rob. There's one, obviously I follow the Football League quite closely. There's the occasional incident of someone like Marvin Johnson, who was a great player for Oxford United, started the season there for the first few games, moved to Middlesbrough on deadline day, played a couple of games for Middlesbrough and has been frozen out by Tony Pulis because he's played for Oxford for three games in August and then Borough for the first half of the season, the majority of it. Pulis wants him out, but he can only go to Oxford because he can't play for a third team in the same season. He didn't want to go back to Oxford, or they didn't offer enough, so he stayed at Borough and he'll just be chilling in the reserves for half a season, which seems a bit of a waste.
Yeah, I think that three-team thing is what kept Mascherano at West Ham for about 4 weeks longer than he wanted to be. He managed to get through it in the end. But wasn't there a case, might even have been last week, where a player on loan in the Bundesliga, I think it was, what was his name? Was it Arsenal? Went to Bayern Munich, is now on loan somewhere and scored against Bayern Munich the other day.
Gnabry?
Yeah.
Is he on loan from Bayern Munich to whoever they were playing the other day and then scored? Ali, I see you doing some immediate Googling.
Trying to work out whether he's... They signed him in the summer, didn't they, Bayern?
Mm. I think so.
But he must be on loan because...
But he was on loan in Germany from Arsenal, I think it was to Wolfsburg already. Mm. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm confused by that as well.
It's mad. If you can do that in other leagues, but then you're cup tied for a European competition you haven't played in, the game's gone mad, lads. This is it.
Football has
officially gone to the dogs.
I'm assuming that this cup-tied rule for European stuff only got introduced when... I mean, is it since the
UEFA
clubs exiting the Champions League have gone into the Europa?
Yeah.
Or did it happen when there was the European Cup and the Cup Winners' Cup operating at the same time? Those cup competitions were shorter then, but
It strikes me as the kind of thing that people back in the day didn't worry about. Do you know what I mean? Like how they didn't worry about your head being hit or comfortable boots. They were just like, cup tie, be a man about it. It's fine. Playing with a broken neck for the same team or a different team in the same tournament, it's fine.
Yeah, not sure of the history of it. I think it could probably be tweaked a little. Lord knows that footballing authorities do love to create a rule and then multiple subsidiaries to the rule. So I don't see it changing anytime soon. So you're just going to have to get used to it, Rob.
That was very threatening.
That was quite brusque, wasn't it?
This is old-fashioned football from Ali Maxwell.
He's such a nice man, normally. He's just saying, just accept it. suck it up, move on.
This is what I'm talking about. This is old-fashioned football. It's basically what he's done is I've been double-footed by Vic Johnson, the 400 appearances for Wolves or something. And he's told me, he's come over, he says, you're just going to have to get on with it. Yeah. That and cup ties, or being cup tied, both of them, equal sins. Vic Johnson doesn't exist, by the way. I don't have very good knowledge of Wolves players with 400 appearances and above, which appropriately leads to the next section, who's this fella? This one actually exists, he's not fictional.
Who's this fella?
Okay, Pietro Pellegrini, who I'm told is the second most expensive 16-year-old in history after signing for Monaco for £17 million from Genoa. Firstly, who is more expensive than that? And how are you getting that price at the age of 16? And secondly, is he any good?
Vinicius Junior, signed by Real Madrid.
Yeah.
But he's still in Brazil. I mean, that was very recently, I think 6 months or so ago, signed for, I think, almost double, maybe even more than double the £17 million that Monaco has spent for Pellegrini. So, you know, that's the way of it now. If there's someone showing some semblance of immense potential at that age, then the big clubs circle, the big clubs strike, and they tend to get their man when they do. So focusing on Pellegrini, I mean, at least he, unlike Mr. Junior of Brazil, has something to show in Europe, games and goals, not loads, but some, yeah, in Italy and Serie A. And how do you end up spending money on a player like this? Well, because you're so excited about him. Mm. And I'm very excited about him.
So Monaco is not a bad... We saw with Mbappe. They'll give you for chance. Well, that whole team really was kids, wasn't it? Like really talented under-25s and things like that. So it certainly seems like a good place to go if you're a player with potential. Filling in the gap for Southampton, sneaking in, yep, Nick and Carrillo.
Yeah, no, I think it's canny business from Monaco because their model... After initially the Russian guy, whose name I won't even try to pronounce, came in and threw a huge amount of money at them, and they did quite well out of it. And then obviously all of that was pulled, and their business model for the last couple of years has been partly because as a catchment area for youth development, Monaco's a rubbish area. They found talented late teenagers, brought them on and sold them at a fairly significant profit. So in that regard, yes, 17 million is a lot of money for a teenager who I think's got 3 Serie A goals, all as substitute this season so far. But they will know that if he develops well in an environment that is absolutely catered for developing young players, they'll be able to sell him for 2, 3, 4 times that amount in a couple of years' time, having presumably got reasonable returns out of him on the pitch anyway. So it might seem like silly money now, but in terms of the way that club operates, it's perfectly in line with what they've been doing recently.
And he's sort of got the... shall we say, raw materials that that scouts get very excited about. 6'5", which is is a good start, but not a lump, not a Jordan Hugill.
Are you telling me that he's got good feet for a big lad?
He's got a good touch. he's got a good pace. He's shown an eye for goal. He scored 2 against Lazio back in September and both very well taken. I mean, he's absurdly young, and to have done anything at that age, at the professional level, is impressive. So he's got all these sort of raw materials, if you will. And as Alex has said, Monaco at this stage, along with perhaps Dortmund, Lyon, exactly where you want to be as a incredibly talented 16-year-old.
Mm. And those are the 3 clubs that absolutely, their whole business model revolves around this, around the acquisition of young talent. Talent, its development, and then its sale. I don't know if you saw the FT produce that really nice infographic the other day.
I did, yeah.
About clubs' net transfer spend and points per game won. And those clubs, particularly Lyon, really stuck out as as generating profit despite having a very good points per game ratio. Now, okay, Lyon, Monaco, they're both playing in the Farmers League, as you referred to it earlier.
Hey, I was just relaying what I've been told by other people who might not watch.
And Dortmund are in a kind of duopoly situation with Bayern Munich, who buy half their good young players anyway. But nonetheless, if you are making a conscious effort to go out, find those players, and particularly at Dortmund, there's been a lot written about it recently in terms of how they develop those young players, then if you are a 16 or 17 year old and you get that opportunity, you know it's likely to be a stepping stone, but one that will develop you significantly as a player as well. That's a really exciting thing. Mm. And those clubs get a good return on their investment. Those players go off after 3-4 years, less maybe, and do very well. They all win it. They've shown there is a different way of doing stuff if you put the money and the thought into your youth development.
Essentially, if all goes well, he will be signed by Real Madrid for £60 million.
Or Man City.
Or Euros. Or Man City before he's 21.
Yeah.
Just to finish off this section, I think it's all about time we all took a little section out of this podcast to cry and or vomit when I tell you that he was born in 2001.
Oh, I feel really old. I'm older than you two, I'm sure. So,
2001. It's awful when it's a year you can remember, isn't it?
1982, I was born.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not as sorry as I am. I'm decaying as we speak.
But okay, before you completely decay, let's go on to the Stat Showdown. Stat Showdown. Okay, then, here we are. Slowly decaying, as is life. All just bunch of guys on a rock, floating through space, decaying. But one thing is important today, Ali and Alex, and that's the Stat Showdown, which transcends, obviously, time, space, and decaying. Alex, it's your debut. Mm. It's the best 2 out of 3 in a impress me in a pub stat show-off competition. It's the best way to put it. Makes perfect sense, grammatically, without a flaw. I'll come to you first. Impress me with a stat.
So, last season, Alexis Sanchez recorded 32 non-penalty goals plus assists. In the whole of the Premier League, only 11 players have managed more than that. And he's the highest since 2013-14, which was Luis Suarez, who was also a January transfer window signing.
A January transfer-themed stat. Ali Maxwell, can you blow me away by saying that someone is as good, if not better, than Luis Suarez?
Yes, Olivier Giroud, much better than Luis Suarez. Not quite, but has a genuinely impressive goal-scoring record when you scrutinise it in terms of minutes per goal, especially since he became a plan B for Arsenal, which he presumably will be at Chelsea. But I'm not focusing on that this time. Out of the 105 goals that Olivier Giroud scored for Arsenal, 33 of them were match winners. That's 31% of goals he scored were the winning goals in matches. 33 matches won on account of Olivier Giroud.
Giroud, you're telling me, is worth 66 points in the Premier League, essentially. If it's 2 points
that
every time to take it from a draw to a win.
Probably wouldn't stand up to scrutiny from the mathematicians. But yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
That means Oli Giroud by himself is possibly getting a Champions League place.
How many of those goals, and this is going to be really mean if you don't know the answer to it, which
I obviously won't.
It would be really interesting to know how many of those goals were when he came on as a substitute rather than having played the full 90.
Tune in next week.
Tune in next week.
Tune in while we
Alex
Google
Stewart
that.
Sticks the knife into Ali Maxwell's back in the middle of the Stat Showdown. I'm going to go Ali Maxwell in this one, just because I like the fact Giroud is worth 66 points. Whether it's necessarily accurate or not, it doesn't matter. It's the narrative I've made in my head. Ali, you're 1-0 up. You could go 2-0 up, which, you know, listeners of the podcast will realise is very rare.
A bit of a...
because I love drama.
A bit of an Arsenal bashing theme, I suppose. The last one indirectly, because those winners were for Arsenal, but he has now left and will be scoring goals in the blue of their rivals, Chelsea. These ones are a little bit more direct. Sam Clucas of Swansea, fairly run-of-the-mill Premier League player, although one with a good backstory, a hard-working player. He's had three shots on target in his Premier League career, which now spans about 18 months. They've all been against Arsenal and they've all gone in. So the only team that has allowed Sam Clucas to shoot at their goal has been Arsenal, and all three times it's gone in.
That's quite a good one. I think you're fighting an uphill battle here, Alex.
I'm under significant pressure here. So I'm gonna see your Sam Clucas and raise you Raheem Sterling. UEFA designate these under 23 players as young players. Raheem Sterling is the first of these under 23 players in Europe's top five leagues to have been directly involved in 20 goals this season. So he's got 14 goals, he's got 6 assists in his 23 appearances. And I, for one, am delighted given the amount of stick that he gets, totally unfairly. Mm. I think we forget how much he carried or contributed to Liverpool when he was there in that season when they scored something like 101 goals.
Yeah. Aged 18.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And he's really found his bounce at City this season. He's doing superbly well. I'm very pleased for him.
See the way you look at that stat with glee, Alex. Well, you might have just given away your point, because you told me Sam Clucas isn't very good and Arsenal are a bit defensively dodgy, whereas Alex, you told me that Raheem Sterling has proven the doubters wrong and is actually arguably the best young player in Europe.
I love
if you
Sterling.
Go with stats. So shock horror. The scores are 1-1.
I, for one, am staggered.
Right, well, both times I've been on previously, it's been 1-1 and I've ended up losing. So no pressure, Rob.
Well, you wouldn't want to break tradition. Alex, go on. Tell me whatever and you'll probably win.
Whatever. Okay, no. No. Back to deadline day. Back to Arsenal. Mesut Ozil. Everyone loves Mesut Ozil, right? And, you know, creative magician, etc. So he made his league debut in August 2006. Since then, he's created over 1,000 goal-scoring chances, which is more than any other player in Europe's top five leagues. Further to that, since he moved to Arsenal in 2013 in the Premier League, he has more assists, 49, than any other player. And he's created more goal-scoring chances than any other player as well. Ozil is king.
It's pretty good. Those are high numbers.
They're big numbers.
Huge yeah. numbers. Great in mass. You're just leaning back and nodding. You look confident.
I was just enjoying how many different words you could find for good numbers. Great big, in mass, great. I've not heard before.
High volume of
Sometimes
units.
I like just sitting here and watching you keep talking, Rob. But I'm going to now. It's my final stat, and it's bashing Arsenal again. Imagine, if you will, that you support a top six club. You have very high expectations.
That's neither of
yeah,
us.
Yeah, imagine that.
Exactly. You're playing an away league game and you go ahead 1-0.
I can't imagine that either.
That result for these clubs tends to be more or less in the bag at that point. But since August 2015, looking at the top six clubs, when they go ahead in away league games, in terms of losses, Chelsea, Man City, Man United and Spurs once in the last 2.5 years have then gone on to suffer defeat. Liverpool twice, not ideal when you're a goal ahead to end up losing twice. 6 times for Arsenal. They've gone ahead in an away league game as they did against Swansea and ended up losing 6 times.
Mm. And Sam Clucas is responsible.
Sam Clucas is responsible. Heavily responsible.
Yeah.
That is quite fun.
I prefer his.
Yeah, Alex, I've got to say, I do rate...
Well, where was Ozil in those games? That's what I want to know.
I do rate fun sometimes over mass.
Over quality of metrics.
Over numbers that are great in mass. Ali, you win on account of funness.
It's a genuinely...
Also just known as fun.
a genuinely big moment in my career and life. So thank you, Rob.
As a reward, and this is a really great award, you get to say where we can find you on the internet first.
Nice. I am at the Makalele Roll on Twitter, and I do a podcast about the Football League called Not the Top 20 Podcast.
And as runner-up, Alex, you get to go second in telling people where they can find you on the internet.
So I'm on Twitter at AFHStuart with an EW, and I'm part of the production team at TIFO Football. We make tactical and historical explanatory videos about football, which is a lot more fun than it sounds.
And as just an observer to the competition, I go third. You can find me at @RobArmstrong_WH. And of course, you can find Defending on Numbers on Deezer, where you can also find lots of podcasts, Premier League commentary and football playlists. Download the app, visit www.deezer.com, and you'll see us there next week on Defending in Numbers.
Defending in Numbers is a Deezer Originals production. You can find and download more episodes on Deezer and all major podcast providers.